Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, it's Friday. We've made it through another week, and yours truly is still sitting in the house I was supposed to move out of over 2 weeks ago. But things, I guess, are coming together. It's pretty... convoluted world of banking, mortgages, real estate, etc. And even though we've done a lot of shows about it, I think I'm going to spend one whole day just researching. And instead of inviting other people who have invested careers in this subject, I think we'll talk some real truths about what's going on. But until that day, today is Friday, and it's recap day. And when I looked at all that this morning, it kind of made me giggle. We've gone from brothels to bullies to colonics and body scrubs to the repercussions, the adult repercussions of bullying, and, of course, the story that is on my mind every single day, the story of this baby, Camden, and his mom. And the rest of his family. So it's been an interesting week, and I think that it's amusing to look at how many times bullying comes into play this week. There wasn't a lot of talk about bullying in the brothel segment. However, in other shows that we've talked about, prostitution and street prostitution and things like that, there is most definitely a lot of bullying going on in that realm of our world. and we had an interesting week about an interesting day in the Bullies to Buddies workbook. And I think that segment that we read, that's really the second time I've gone over it, because I think it's so important. Because it's about mature behavior. It's about learning how to deal and cope and be a part of this world without either laying down and letting people run all over you, or being the runner-overer, if that's a word. There's a happy medium in there, and that's a part of what this workbook is teaching us. It's not just teaching us how to teach our children to overcome being picked on or harassed or singled out and be made fun of for whatever reasons, which there seem to be a huge amount of those kind of reasons that can come up, but to learn how to deal with it and be not so accepting of that kind of peer pressure, ridicule, and poor behavior on the parts of others. So Wednesday, we talked about the worth of going to a spa, in essence, or just doing nice things for yourself at home. We talked about baking soda baths. We talked about a lot of different things. We talked about the worth of colonics. We even talked about jumping up and down on a rebounder. And then Thursday, we kind of mixed the stories because I found the article about the repercussions of bullying once you reach adulthood, and the fact that we were kind of surprised to find out that often the inflammation that settles in someone's body is not just from being bullied, but from holding things in. Even though I knew that in my heart, I knew that, but seeing it in print put it into kind of a strange perspective, because it actually means that the ones that say whatever they feel like saying, which I think is rude and unnecessary, actually don't have those inflammations. So that was something Shelley and I discussed at length yesterday. And, of course, the story of Carrie's baby, Camden. So I'm going to bring Shell in so we can discuss these days and have Any of you that would like to join us, call in at 347-989-0352 and give us your 50 cents worth. We'd love to hear it. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. I like your new way of terming victim and perpetrator as being run over or being the run overer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I make up my own style of proper English. I'm not sure, but I think that's a big possibility.
Yeah.
I think when you're a kid and you're allowed to express yourself in any, you know, with your own personal vocabulary as it exists, you come up with a lot of stuff like that, and I think I never grew out of that.
That's good. That was good. So, yeah, no, it was quite an interesting week, and interesting how so many things overlap each other. You know, all the different discussions we have. You know, it sounds like we're having such a variety of subjects that we talk about, and yet they always seem to touch on each other.
Well, because I think poor behavior is poor behavior. Unprofessional behavior is unprofessional behavior. So when we talk about businesses or organizations and we talk about everyday people and we talk about school kids, they're all intertwined. And it's different situations, possibly different, always different players, possibly different vocabulary, like I just said. Some people make up stuff like I do. Some people really have a great vocabulary and can express themselves openly. And some people have a real nasty vocabulary and mean and hurtful words. And I think that, of course, has a lot to do with the bullying. When my kids were growing up, there were a couple words that I don't tolerate, and a couple we've talked about on the show before. Stupid was always one of them. Stupid to me sounds like so awful. Isn't it funny how some words, you hear them and you're just like, God, it even hurts your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not being said about you or to you. And that's how I feel about the word stupid. Dumb doesn't affect me like that. I also don't like the word idiot, because idiot is a word that's used to actually diagnose. And, I don't like that word either. So my kids and even the adults in my life, I say, don't use that word. If you want to use that word to somebody, especially don't use it to a child, either one of those words. And and there's a couple other words that I don't like, but those two words, as far as young people are concerned, have always, meant more to me than they do to other people, because I hear them all the time. But the connotations on those words, I think, are deep and can scar deep. So let's go to Monday's show. We talked about legalizing prostitution. We talked about the local brothel that was just broken up here recently in Pembroke Pines. And I even shared my story, and that was in Deerfield Beach. So we know that it exists. We know that it's a part of our life. And there's a lot of discussion these days about legalizing it and making it a bona fide way to earn money and pay taxes and, you know, make a living. So what do you think we got out of that show, honey?
My opinion hasn't changed. One of the things that I hope our listeners got out of it is to not take your personal morality and not to apply your personal morality to whether or not it should be legalized. And what I mean by that is, don't say it should or should not be legalized based on whether or not you as an individual think it's okay to use the services of legalized prostitution. Look at the impact on communities and society at large. All right. It doesn't have to touch on your morality. You may be a man who would never go to a prostitute, somebody who's very solid in their marriage or in their relationship with their significant other. You know, and it just may be something that you would never do, and it just goes against your moral code. That does not mean that it's bad for society or bad for the community. When you look at what illegal prostitution does, the violence to the women, John's put at risk by seeing a woman who may have certain diseases because they don't get proper medical care, things like that. You know, getting a sexual release in a back alley, which is dangerous and unhealthy, you know, and it addresses those negatives. It's not going to go away. Men are not going to stop seeking this release because, like I said, men are different than women, and they can have emotional sex with somebody they love. Men do fall in love with women, okay? So they do have that connection. I'm not saying they don't. But they also can have casual sex, and it is really, from an emotional standpoint, meaningless to them. It's much, much harder for women to have casual sex, although the women that choose to become professional prostitutes do not get emotionally connected. They are addressing it more like a man would address casual sex. So they can do it as a business and not be harmed emotionally by it. So, you know, once you wrap your head around the bigger picture here and you look at something that's just going to cut down on the criminal and the violent effect of that type of sexual activity being out there, I think there's more pros than cons about legalizing it because you start taking away the criminal aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would agree with that. But on that note, so are you okay with what we know will happen governmentally? Are you okay with the fact that huge amounts of taxes will be paid? Not that you're okay with it because you wouldn't have any choice, but how do you feel about that end of it? I mean, for me, it's kind of like another opportunity for the government to make more money and still plead poverty, and that part leaves me with a little bad feeling. And then there's also the fact that the involvement of the government and, you know, with all of it is also something that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, but the only way that they can get the government assistance, such as insurance, which a lot of it is government-backed, where employers will pay a large portion of the insurance policies, the only way that can happen if it's a legalized business that pays taxes. So, yeah, I have issues with the government collecting taxes because they don't do the right thing with the money. We're in more debt now than ever before. We print more money. You know, we're very the Federal Reserve just keeps printing money to match our debts, and that's why our economy is collapsing. And every other country that's ever done this, their economy has collapsed. It took England 200 years. We've done in 50 years what took England 200 years. You know, the London money used to be the international currency. And then the United States took it over about 47 years ago. The U.S. dollar became international currency, became the world currency. And we did in 50 years what took England 200 years to do, to devalue their money. So we've done it at an accelerated rate. So I agree with you on that. But the bottom line is that's the only way to make it a legitimized business and to get the other things that are beneficial from legitimized businesses, such as healthcare, such as rules and regulations of operation, so that the employees cannot be taken advantage of. You know, you don't have somebody working overtime and not getting paid. You don't have somebody having 99% of what they made taken away from them. You know, there's an agreed-to salary, hourly wage, salary, per diem, whatever, and these people are locked in and they can make good livings and safe livings and provide a service that's in demand. It's, you know, so you have to look at it like that and take the morality out of it, because nobody is being harmed by this. That's what people have to understand. Whether it goes against your moral grain or not, if it's done in a clean, safe environment, nobody's being harmed. So we really have to mind our own businesses and let people make their own moral decisions.
Well, that could be done with or without the government. That could be done in the streets still.
I don't think so.
Well, it can be. You not having any moral objections to it is the only point I'm making. Not everything you said, but accepting something morally you can do, whether it's in the street or in the government. And let's face it, there's a lot of things that we accept morally in the government right now, such as some of our leadership, et cetera. So I agree with everything you said, and I agree the safety is an issue. I kidded the other day. I've always thought I'd make an awesome madam. But it is what it is. And in some circles, and of course you're going to have a group of religious, I don't want to say fanatics, but people who really believe in something totally different, who really believe. And I don't want to take away from them, because we've talked about religion a lot on the show, and it is what it is, and your beliefs are your beliefs. As long as you're not harming anyone else or insisting that someone else believes what you believe, then you should be able to do whatever you like. This is the United States of America. Let freedom ring. So that's the way it's supposed to be. But when we talk about morals, accepting something has to do with our own feelings about morality. So I know people who don't see... The only thing about prostitution that I've ever seen that I really disliked was when I see young kids in the street making a living that way. That hurts my heart. It hurts my sense of well-being. It hurts the way I feel about our world. Every entity that has something to do with that, when I see pictures or I watch a show on TV, like on 60 Minutes or something in Los Angeles, and even here in Florida, in Miami and places like that, there's 13, 12-year-old hookers out there in the street, boys and girls, that are making a living that way.
Well,
for
unfortunately,
me,
that's
totally immoral.
Yes, and that particular segment of it, Rainey, wouldn't be touched by legalized prostitution for the simple reason that in legalized prostitution, a 12 or 13-year-old child would not be of legal age to be
exactly.
to work in a brothel, to work in a legal
exactly.
brothel. It wouldn't be permitted because of the age. So, and you're also talking about a different type of clientele. You're almost going into pedophilia with that type of sexual appetite. So you're getting into deviance now. So that portion of
society.
And that's
the worst part of all of it. That's my point. That's my whole point. Everything you just said right there is my whole point. So when we talk about legalizing it and putting it in the work world, we aren't changing the most horrific parts of it, is my whole point. We aren't taking away the part that's the worst. The fact that there's women that are, 25, 35, 45, and are working girls and out there, and they work for whoever, and they do whatever they want to do, that's the world that will change. The world of the worst part of prostitution is what I just mentioned, the street kids, the drug addiction, all the bad things, because somebody said something on TV last night on a comedy show about you never know what happens to a kid until they get to become an adult, and you may never know, and they may never know. It was, but the way they handle being an adult is often, a manifestation of what happened to them as a child.
Right.
And the saddest part about that is, without really deep therapy, sometimes hypnotism and things like that, to unbury that. But this guy was talking about alcoholism, drug addiction, kleptomania, and then, of course, physical harm to people
right.
is often manifested from something somebody has buried. And, of course, we've talked about that before. So when I watch shows like that, that's where my head goes. right, to those little kids in
right.
the street. You know, when I was 11 years old, the thought of having sex to me was like, ew, oh my God, are you kidding me? So, and yet you see this all the time. You know, you see it all the time. And the experimentation as well that's going on in the schools and all the little girls that think that they are lesbian or think that they're bi because they're just so filled with experimentation and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
Anyway, now I'm getting off track. But my point is that it's not going to change the worst part of prostitution. It will keep people safer. It will hopefully clean up some of the disease and some of the heartache that goes with it in the adult world. But it
right.
won't change the most horrific part of it, legalizing it.
Right. There has to be more programs to help children in crisis, and I find it mind-boggling that in a country that espouses to be such a world leader, and at one time the U.S. was, and we really aren't now, we've really dropped in ranks as far as health and human services and things like that. The United States spends more money helping other countries than dealing with the problems within its own walls, and it's something that's quite astonishing to me. But there should be more programs to help children because children are our legacy. If we're not taking care of our children, what are we thinking? You know,
mm-hmm.
we're almost dooming
exactly.
ourselves to a future that's going to be, doom and gloom because without another generation coming up behind the present generation that's got a good mind on their shoulders, that's humanitarian, this country isn't going to survive, and the powers that be need to wake up and start looking at programs to save these throwaway kids and help them. They're not on the streets because they're bad kids. They're on the streets because they've had bad things done to them. And
that's right.
The authorities need to step in and do something about that. Stop spending money on millions of dollars in money being given to experiments to find out about the sex life of a bear. I mean, come on, really? Take that money and clean up the streets first and then go into scientific research that really has no bearing on anything other than the curiosity of a scientist. I see millions and millions of dollars being spent on scientific research that really has no potential to ever benefit anybody other than creating knowledge. And knowledge is a great thing, but not when you have millions of kids out on the street that aren't even eating and that are sacrificing their bodies just to get a bite to eat at the end of the night. There's something wrong with that picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course we know it goes even deeper than that, but I agree. And as a matter of fact, I've been working on a show that I want to do about the fact that we have to start figuring, I mean, there's lots of organizations out there. There's lots of homeless places. There's lots of halfway houses. There's lots of different things that, battered women places. There's all kinds of help going on. And wonderful, albeit Band-Aids. Because what we really need to do is we need to start at the crux of the problem. And that is we need to make it more achievable to have a home, pay your utilities, put insurance on your car, have a car, be able to put new tires on it, be able to have the oil changed, feed your family, wear decent clothes so that your kid doesn't get bullied because he has on, his big brother's
mm-hmm.
clothes or his big sister's clothes. This is the crux. And instead of we're catching fly balls out there in the big picture and trying to fix them, instead of pulling ourselves in and going to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is we do not support families. We do not support the availability. Who do you know? Who do you know off the top of your head? You have nieces and nephews and young people in your life. You and I knew lots of young people at the Institute. We've all worked in places where there are 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds trying to get started. Who do you know today with our average pay scale being about $10 an hour that can afford to pay $1,000 a month just for their rent or their mortgage, not counting if it's a mortgage, there's going to be taxes, there's going to be insurance pegged into that, not to mention utilities and all of the above. Who do you know that can do that by themselves? Anyone?
Well, I mean, I know couples that can do that, but no, I don't know any individual person that can.
But even a couple, you know, even a couple, it's a struggle for. Even a couple,
right.
It's a struggle for. So, because it means $1,000 a month, the rule of thumb, and I know I drill this into the wall sometimes, but $1,000 a month means you have to bring in $1,000 a week. And at $10 an hour, that's impossible. At $15 an hour, it's impossible if you take out insurance to cover your butt in case you get, you know, sick or something happens.
Right.
So, and that's for two people. $15 an hour for two people on a weekly basis might bring home $1,000, depending on what kind of stuff they get taken out of their paycheck. But the point is that until we fix that, until we get ourselves to a place where that is doable. I mean, way back with Jimmy Carter, he started Habitats for Humanity. Great idea. What happened to that? What happened to that? It
well,
means you have to be so down and out that they'll help you.
Right, right.
You have
to
be penniless, street poor. I'm not talking about that. I think that's horrendous as well. I'm just talking about the ones that are trying to go to work every week and trying to pay their bills and trying to afford their insurance. Spikey and Crystal and Josh, the three of them, took on an apartment that's $1,100 a month. And they're already fighting over toilet paper. Now, I mean, to just simplify it, they're already fighting over toilet paper.
Yep, yep.
So it isn't, until we fix that, we won't fix a lot of the other stuff that we see manifested from that. Let's jump. We've already spent almost a half hour on Monday. We do that every time.
We always do that, though.
I know. Bullies to Buddies was great. And I think those are life lessons, what we're talking about right now in the workbook, about morals, immorality, the social graces that we need to teach our kids about the right and wrong of what you do to others and what you'll tolerate being done to you and how you handle it. And I think those lessons are invaluable. And I would like to see those lessons be reminded to every person I know, every person I know. Hurtful words, jumping to conclusions. Another big thing is not being able to take a joke. You know, if something is said to you, I had this discussion with AJ the other night. He says, he told me about interfering in a fight between two other people. He's really good at that. You know, he takes everything I talk about on this show very seriously, you know. And he comes home and tells me if somebody else is being bullied or if somebody else is being picked on, and he doesn't like it.
Wow.
And, yeah, and we talked about it, and I said, you have to be careful, though. Before you interfere or before you do anything, you know, first of all, make sure your own safety is there. I don't want you getting hurt because you stuck your nose in where it didn't belong. I said, but if you see something that's going on, and of course Izzy says not to do this, but he's talking about the tattletale that runs every time somebody looks at them cross-eyed. If you really see something that's going on, you do have to speak to somebody if you're seven or younger, or even up to sixth grade, you have to say something to somebody. I said, but also, I want you to take into account what's being said. There are some things that can be said to somebody that, you know, they just laugh off because they don't believe them. And we've talked about this 100 times. But when you think it's true, that's when it hurts you the most. And then you lash out. Something that was meant in jest, you feel that way about yourself. Like I said to him the other day, I said, you know, you can tell grandma she's a big dummy and I laugh, but if you call grandma a fat ass, you hurt my feelings because it's true.
Yeah.
And he always looks at me, you know, with these big, grandma, you're not fat. And I say, yes, then you keep saying that because that's a good way to stay on my good side. But the truth is always what hurts you, because if you believe it about yourself, then that's when it really gets inside of you and hurts you. So a lot of that is learning that when you're young and realizing that it doesn't necessarily mean that's what the other person thinks. It means that's what you think. So the lessons we had on Tuesday, I think, are invaluable for all of us. They made me think about a lot of different things, didn't they, you?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
You and
is,
I, both for
kid.
Opposite reasons, have been picked on before for, you know, me for being big, you for being little.
Right, right. But the also is that you can teach kids to have enough of a, well, I mean, a lot of times the word self-esteem is not used properly, but not so much to have self-esteem, but to have self-comfort, to be okay with who they are, with their flaws.
Yeah, self-assured. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, self-assured, mm-hmm. self-comfortable, being okay with who they are. And that sounds kind of corny, but the bottom line is if a kid is okay with who they are, whether they have scars, you know, because sometimes what's wrong with them may be permanent. You know, maybe they're scarred, maybe they were in an accident, something happened, and they have some physical deformity now or a scar, or maybe they are very, very heavy, or they're very, very skinny, or they're very, very tall, or very, very short, okay, things they can't change. And it's important to teach kids to be okay with whoever they are. Perfect example is when I was, I had become very overweight at one point. I was having problems with my skin. This is when I was still very sick, and my hair was very long. I was trying to let it grow in, and I cannot wear long hair. My hair looks goofy when it gets too long, and I was trying to grow it in. So I knew that my appearance was not even okay to me. I didn't feel good about myself as far as my appearance, but I felt good about me. I was okay with me, and I realized that this thing I was going through was temporary. I was trying to lose weight, and I had already planned on cutting my hair, and I was out with my sister, got in an argument with some girls at the mall, and the one girl turned around and called me fat and ugly. She said, I mean, I criticized her about something. She turned around. She goes, well, you're fat and ugly. She said, who are you to talk to me? I said, well, you know, honey, I said, I may be fat and ugly. I said, but, and this wasn't a nice thing for me to say, I said, but at least I'm not ignorant, because she was acting ignorant. And she got all bent out of shape and walked away from me. I mean, because she didn't get me upset about myself. I just kind of threw it back in her lap. I was telling her not to be so nasty. You know, she had done something very mean in front of me, and I stopped it. And here she thought she was going to intimidate me by insulting me, but instead of me taking it internally, I knew that I was kind of like not where I wanted to be, but I also knew I could do something about it. So I didn't allow it to derail me. I stayed focused, and I didn't allow it to hurt my feelings, and I actually kind of laughed about it, you know. And so no matter where you are in life, if there's something about yourself you can change, and you're of a mind to change it, change it. If you can't change it or you're not of a mind to change it, then be okay with it. That's one of the biggest lessons to learn, because if you're okay with who you are, regardless of whether other people are, then it won't bother you when people try to be mean to you. You'll just be able to say, well, hey, you know, this is what it is. You know, this is who I am. Take it or leave it. And when you get that attitude, then you really won't get your feelings hurt by people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. And that's the whole point. If you can listen to what they say, and the only thing that really hurts you is what you believe yourself. And
exactly.
Sometimes it is true, and sometimes it isn't true. So learning to know the difference is what's imperative to your own personal well-being. So Wednesday, we talked about some good stuff. We talked about all the wonderful things you can do for yourself to alleviate some stress, to some cases even alleviate some illness. It's like pampering yourself,
mm-hmm.
taking better care of who you are, giving yourself. I mean, like I know people who, to pamper themselves, they sit in a quiet room with a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and do a crossword puzzle. Hey,
yep.
If that's what floats your boat, you should be doing that at least once a day. You know, I'm not a big, I don't want to be a proponent of too much wine or too much coffee. I don't care how many crosswords you do. But I am in line with you doing something that brings you some inner peace. And so we talked about salt scrubs. We talked about and how rejuvenating that is, skin brushing, how rejuvenating. We talked about soak baths with baking soda or sea salt. Any of those things are awesome for you. And, of course, we didn't touch too much on exercise and yoga, but obviously, for me, a brisk walk can sometimes take me from uptight and mean and miserable and get the hell out of my way to, oh, hi, how are you? Is everything all right today? I mean that. Or listening to a rendition of Moni Moni can do that for me as well. So it all depends on what brings you some personal comfort, peace, and alleviation of the stress of the day. We talked about rebounding. We talked about jumping up and down like kids mm-hmm. do all the time. It can help keep you healthy. It can help your lymph get moving. I talked about Brian teaching me about the circles under the eyes. Shelley talked about the rebounders and the lymphalines at length when she would teach some of her guests at the Institute about that. And we also talked about aqua chi. We talked about lemon water, the fact that lemon water can alleviate water retention and things like that, and edema that many of us suffer from that are over the age of 40, by the way. Even mm-hmm. I've even seen, I always look at people's feet because my feet are horrible. I wear a size 11 shoe. I have always struggled with my nails because all those years of wearing waitress shoes, I just did my feet in. So I always look at people's feet and their ankles, and I'm astounded to see how many very light people, men and women alike, hold edema in their ankles by mm-hmm. 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yep.
Have you ever
yep.
checked that out? I mean, I thought it was just us heavy people that do that, but that's not true.
Well, no, that's how I found out about the lemon water, because I went for about when my heart condition kind of when it was giving me some issues, it was going back about four or five years ago. I went about a year and a half where at the end of every evening, like you said, around 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, if you looked at my ankles, they were the size of elephant's feet. You couldn't see any of the bones anymore. It went from about the middle of my calf to the top of my foot, and it was blown up like a frickin' balloon. And it's because of it was, in my particular case, it was because of improper heart function. It was actually creating that. And so I took care of both, and that's how I started drinking, because I wasn't going to take Lasix or one of these diuretics. I started doing the lemon water and starting to take CoQ10, which is a cardiac enzyme, CoQ10 and hawthorn. And within about 6 months, it corrected the issues, and it's never come back. I don't get it anymore. But for a year and a half, and it had nothing to do with my weight, this was internal water retention, edema, and it would collect in my feet. And my feet would really, they would spasm at night. My legs would spasm because of all the fluid. And the lemon water was really just saved me. It would pull all that edema out by the next morning, because it's not good to have it there. It can become
right.
toxic. Fluid can become
right.
toxic, cause other health issues. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about all that, and I hope some people took our advice. We talked about the baking soda as well. Baking soda is a good draw if somebody has, like a sliver, infection from a bug bite, anything like that, a small child in particular, a baking soda bath, you can always talk them into. Nothing hurts. It's just good for them, and it helps pull it out. And then, of course,
one of the main things mine about this, because you're talking about pampering yourself, and if you can afford it, massages are definitely something that
oh
highly
my God,
recommend.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to get relaxed, I wouldn't necessarily recommend the deep tissue. You should go with Swedish or something that's gentle. Deep tissue mm-hmm. massage, although it's very healthy, does not necessarily relax you because they're digging into your muscles and stuff like that. So unless you're somebody who's really had massages before, if you're going your first time for a massage, make sure you ask for something that's gentle and relaxing, because mm-hmm. I did a deep my first time, and it was not relaxing. mm-hmm. And the other thing is you don't always have to spend money to pamper yourself. What you said a few minutes ago, put on some music that you really enjoy,
mm-hmm.
a hobby that floats your boat, that even if you only do it 15 minutes a day, find something that makes you feel good inside, that's entertaining, that makes you feel happy, that makes you feel serene. Yoga is excellent. You know, you can go on YouTube and you can get all these things free now. You can find videos, a 7-minute video, and it shows you different yoga moves. you know, we're in the information age now. You don't have to go and spend money at a yoga clinic anymore. There's all kinds of stuff on the internet now that you can Google. Try to practice yoga. Walk. Just go out of your house and walk for 20 minutes a day. It is so healthy. And pick your head up. The act of looking up and out, looking at a distance, believe it or not, releases hormones in the body that can uplift your mood. So just the act of walking and getting out of your four walls.
Don't walk and look up, everybody. Don't walk and look up. You'll fall in a pothole or something. Stand still when you're looking up.
Well, no, I mean you look up and then look back down. I'm not saying look up because while you're walking.
I don't want anybody walking around with their head tilted up and walking into a tree or something, you know.
Yeah. But and then, again, going to the beach. All right. I mean, there are things you can do that don't cost you any money that are very, very therapeutic, very healing to the body, and music is extremely powerful. Classical, rock and roll, dance, country, whatever kind of music you like, and I like it all. So sometimes I'm listening to classical, sometimes I'm listening to rock and roll. You know, it depends on what mood I'm in, but music is very, very therapeutic, and it's another way we can pamper ourselves and make ourselves feel better.
That's right. Well, everybody knows that's one of the things that saves my sanity. I have a PT Cruiser convertible, and I put the top down and play my music and just lose myself. So it is awesome. I think music can make you or break you on any given day. And like Shelley said, it doesn't cost you anything to listen to music. So, because a lot of times you, when we talk about some of this pampering, she's right, you know, we talk about it and everybody thinks, oh, that's easy for you to say, you know, I can't afford to do. Well, and I get that. We also talked about a rolling pin under your foot. Stress relieving and releases the secretions that are in the bottom of your feet that keep your feet healthy. So there's a lot of different things that you can do. So that was a great show. I loved it. It made me remember things that I haven't thought about in a while that I know are beneficial to our own well-being. So then we talked on Thursday. I found the article about the repercussions of a young person who's bullied all their life and illness. They actually did testing, blood tests, and realized that a lot of people had too much of this particular, what would you call that? What was it called? B creatin or something like that? I don't remember. And we talked about the fact that it was, started inflammation in your body. And, of course, inflammation is what causes a lot of disease. And this circles back to the Wednesday show about getting rid of the edema, because the edema can increase inflammation. Because when you have stagnant fluid in around your joints, your tendons, your even in your vertebrae, in your back, I know people who swell below their waistline. They have glands and your adrenal glands and stuff like that that are in various places in your body. When they swell up and back up, that causes severe illness. And the Swedish massage that Shelley was talking about can release that as well. I don't want to get on back to that show, but while I'm thinking about it, I want to make sure that you understand that. There's also a massage called Lomi, where they use their forearm, and they kind of slide down the back of your body and down your legs and everything and up towards your heart, and that's amazingly good for you, as is lymph massage, too. So just keep that in the back of your mind. So the repercussions of the bullying with this inflammation, we found out some strange things. We found out that people that were bullied had this inflammation, and people that didn't say anything, didn't get bullied, didn't have any of these kind of things, would often have them as well, because maybe they held things in too much and didn't speak up. And the ones who didn't have a lot of it were the bullies. And that kind of disappointed Shelley and I, and but not really surprised us, I don't think, because if you don't hold in anger, I imagine you don't get quite as much inflammation in your body. So we talked about that, and then we moved on to the story of Carrie and Camden. And every day I am reading the repercussions from this. And this morning I got a big posting from parents in 2005 that dealt with Gentle Care Adoption Agency in Ohio. And they started planning to adopt a baby girl. And they did all the things that they were told to do. You know, they paid almost $35,000. And at the very end, it's just the other side of the story. At the very end of being with the baby for 2 days, a baby girl, they were told that the father, the natural father, was out there, and but he was in jail. So there was nothing for them to worry about. Well, just because he's in jail doesn't mean he doesn't have the right to his child. So
right.
He fought the adoption. And Gentle Care didn't advise them of that until after they bonded with this baby, spent all this money, traveled
wow.
a couple hundred miles to get to where the baby was born, and did all this stuff. This article was written in 2005, and they were still awaiting the return of their cash because they didn't get Sydney. And they talked a little bit about the heartache and the – and I don't want to make light of that. Even though I've been an advocate for Carrie and her baby, I also see both sides of this story. And I think Shelley does too. Any family that goes through the paperwork must be overwhelming. And all of the stuff that you go through and the waiting. And yes, you're not going through the pregnancy. I get all that. I get everything about this. This can either be the most beautiful thing that ever happens to these two parties, or this can be the most horrific thing that ever happens to these two parties. And again, my finger gets pointed at Gentle Care or adoption agencies that are similar that don't take every story into account. So this made me think. I've always thought about it, but this really opened my eyes to how upset this other family was.
Well, but the bottom line is it shows that Gentle Care is looking at closing the deal and not informing the parties properly. So they didn't inform Carrie of the bigger picture of what was happening with her. And then here in this family, they didn't tell them. I'm a layperson, and I know that the man in jail had rights. You just because you're in jail mm-hmm. doesn't mean you give up your rights. It depends on what you're in jail for. He might have been getting out in a year or whatever. He doesn't lose the rights. His child just because he's incarcerated. That's ridiculous. You know, you still have to have both parents' consent when a child is being put up for adoption. You know, you don't give up your rights. And so that's ridiculous that they even told him, don't worry about this man. And then, when he found out about it, he was able to do something about it. So that, again, that points a finger at Gentle Care for blurring the facts. To close the deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the whole point is
action.
Yeah. And there's always two sides to every story, and we get that. We're not oblivious to that. We understand that your story is the story you're sticking to. My story is the story I'm sticking to. There are stories, but in order to sit in a place that mediates and that awards the prize to one or the other, you have to be sure you're listening to the whole story. And apparently that's what this organization doesn't do because they're more concerned about the sale. And that hurts me real bad because that sounds like we're buying and selling babies. That's what it sounds like. And,
well, it is. I mean,
sadly, that's what it is. Exactly.
Right, it doesn't sound like it. And the bottom line is I don't think it's that they're not listening to the stories, Rainey. I think they're ignoring them. they're hearing the facts. They know exactly what's going on. They heard Carrie's side of it. They heard what these people thought were, you know, and but what it is they're ignoring the factual information of where these people are because it might interfere with them being able to close the deal. That's where the lack of ethics is being shown here. It's not that they're not listening to the stories, is that they're not acting ethically with the stories that they're hearing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the point I'm making, too. It is what it is, and if you're not doing your job, which is to find out all the true facts and all the ramifications and all the everything that's going on, then you're not doing a good job. I think the deal is because it's such a commodity. A newborn is a big commodity. A newborn to a healthy mom. Now, I've told the story about my friend who was a nurse in an emergency room in Jackson Memorial for many, many years. We're the same age. And in her 40s, she went back to school and became a lawyer. And she designed a program that found funding that's out there in limbo, which there's lots of that, by the way, grants and funds and awards and everything that are set up by wealthy people through the years that support certain things. So she found monies available to actually save the lives of crack-addicted babies. If not save the lives, then at least make them comfortable, you know, for the little bit of time that they were here on this earth. When she did that, I mean, she's telling me what she did, and we're on the phone, and I just started crying, and I was like, I got this visual. And she said there's actually wards in the hospital of babies that are just put there to starve to death because they're so addicted and there's nothing we can do for them. Saving one baby's life like that was an astronomical amount of money because they were in so much trouble. So those babies, you know, were not considered for anyone. And and the babies that are born to people that are in any kind of physical duress, whether it's self-inflicted or nature did it to them or whatever, same there. But you get a healthy, vibrant woman who's giving birth and has decided for whatever reasons, you know, she doesn't think she should keep the baby because she's usually thinking about the baby. I don't know if that's true in every case, but in most cases she's thinking about the baby and how much the baby will be loved and how much can be done for the baby. And then she goes in. You still need to find out where her head is at. But the woman on the street who really has no ability to care for that child, her baby is not as valuable. That's sad for me because her baby needs somebody. But
right.
You know, that's the way our life is, you know, our world is set up, very sadly. So it did make me really, even though I felt like I was aware of it, a lot more aware of what goes on the other side of that playing field. And my heart does go out to the family that Carrie's baby was involved with. That must have been horrible for them. And, of course, now they're fighting to get their money back, and it hasn't been returned to them yet, to my knowledge. So a lot of these things are, you know, the fault of the powers that be, and people aren't stepping up to the plate and taking care of things the way they should be. So Carrie's story and all the articles that I'm reading, a lot of them are on my Facebook page. A lot of stories get sent to me that are about this particular adoption agency. I'm going to put some feelers out there if anybody out there knows of good stories. I mean, I've talked to some adults that were adopted, and we shared this last week. We have a close friend who's just, you know, loves his family. We have John Radke who sent me that lovely message about, you know, how he feels about his parents and how his sister and he were both adopted. And the fact that his parents had to wait a year before he and his sister were actually theirs. There was a year trial period to make sure that they were the right parents, it was the right fit, all that kind of stuff. And his parents weren't even there waiting in the wings So it's pretty convoluted, and it doesn't seem to have any set ground rules, kind of United States-wide or anything else. Have you ever heard any stories about, other countries' adoptions? Nobody sent me anything like that. Have you ever heard anything about the way other countries handle adoptions?
No, I really don't know anything about international adoptions. I think that just by virtue of the fact that, I mean, you hear all these like third world adoptions where people go into like orphanages in either third world countries, even Russian. I mean, I know there's a lot of people in the United States that adopt Russian babies for some reason. And obviously those adoptions are certainly more permanent. Because the babies are coming from orphanages, so there's no parents in the wings. And I'm not sure, why people choose to adopt from other countries. Maybe the orphanages are in worse condition than the orphanages in the United States, but maybe the reason is because there is no parents in the wings and the adoptions are more permanent, where in many states in the United States, it can go up to 2 years, I believe. Now, I'm not positive about that, and the laws may have changed, but I know that there was a time that in some states, the birth parents had up to 2 years to claim the baby back, to change their minds. And obviously, being the adoptive parent, being sympathetic to that side of the fence, that's you have a child in your family for 2 years, and then you're told that now you have to give it back. That can be extremely traumatic. So maybe that's why some people to go outside to other countries.
Well, I mean, I think we all know about all the movie stars that have done that. I mean, there's Brad and Angelina who have gone to all different kind of third world countries and brought back children to give them a better life, and I think that's awesome. And there's, I can't think of all of them now. It seems like Gwyneth Paltrow, I think even... Julia Roberts, I think she adopted a baby from another country. I don't know. Don't quote me on any of this, but I watch some of this sometimes. And part of me is thinks that's wonderful. And then when I look around, it's another deal. You send money to feed all these people in another country, and we have people here that are starving. So it is what it is, and I have mixed emotions about it, but of course in the big picture, I'm just happy somebody's doing something for any kid that needs them. So, that's where I stay with most of that, is that makes me feel good. Not that anybody cares how I feel about it, but it's my own personal well-being that I'm talking about. If I know people are doing good things, even though I may question the way they did it, if it's good for somebody, then I think it's good. So I think that the big part of the adoption thing is that it needs to be more closely monitored by the powers that be, and so should the money that changes hands. And I would love to know who is in charge of that, what kind of, organization monitors adoption agencies, and what the criteria is, and what kind of guidelines are handed out to people. I mean, it's probably way over my head because I'm not a lawyer, and it's probably very convoluted, and different things probably apply to different people, et cetera, because that's the way we do things in our world. But I would like to know who keeps an eye on people. We all need to be watched. Being watched keeps us all more honest. I don't mean covertly watched. I just mean openly watched. So you want to say happy Memorial Day to everybody, Shel?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's this, next Monday's Memorial Day?
Yep, it's a long weekend for all the kids. They don't have school Monday. Matter of fact, my granddaughter in Broward County didn't have school today, so she got a four-day weekend.
Wow, nice. So, well, everybody have. I hope there's a lot of celebrations and barbecues and family time. And, happy Memorial Day to everyone.
Yeah, same from me, and I hope it's a safe one. And A word of warning, I watched the weather this morning, and here in Florida, we're supposed to be almost 100 degrees this weekend.
Oh, wow.
So if you are outside, you know, sunblocks and water, water, water. Don't get weak outside. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend. Happy Memorial Day, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel. Talk to you later, babe.
Okay, sweetie. Bye, everyone.